The United States government presents... This is Our Enemy. Tonight, the United Nations go forward with the determination to win this war and bring about a just and enduring peace. But we cannot win our war or make our peace unless we understand the character of the enemy we are fighting. That is why your government is bringing these programs to you. Later, we shall hear Behind the Enemy Lines, a special weekly report by Matthew Gordon of the Office of War Information. Tonight, we present a dramatization of They Who Wait by Robert Guerlain, a story of French prisoners of war in Germany. And now, They Who Wait.
Dogs, bayonets, a road that never ends. A heavy rain pours steadily down. The ground is soaked and turns into bottomless mud under our feet. At last, a huge gate before us. Barbed wire entanglements.
Halt!
We stand before a huge signboard, brilliantly lighted. Carved in wood, we see the figures of French soldiers. They are disarmed in rags. They stoop beneath an invisible burden. The caption on the signboard reads, Nach Berlin, to Berlin. For the first time, we become fully conscious of our situation. We are prisoners of war, more than prisoners, symbols of defeat. Robert Guerlain, a French soldier. I was held prisoner of war by the Nazis. This is my story. Our camp is somewhere in Germany. Our barracks is a room some 200 feet long and 30 wide. From top to bottom and end to end, it is filled with a curious maze of scaffoldings. Three platforms, one on top of the other. Each of these platforms is a bed for four men. 416 men will live in this barrack for years. We begin our new life as French prisoners of war in Germany. We get up at 6 o'clock. 400 men battle around a single water spigot for the privilege of washing without soap and brushing teeth without toothbrushes. At 7 o'clock, the daily bread ration.
What is this stuff?
It's bread, my friend.
Feels more like a lump of clay. Well, is it edible, you think?
If it isn't, we're going to starve. We'll get nothing else till tomorrow.
Nothing at all?
Nothing at all.
I don't think I can get this stuff down.
You'll learn to, Alex. So will we all.
Yes, we got it down all right. In fact, until the first food parcels arrived from France months later, our last thought before sleeping and our first on waking were of this daily bread ration. Soon after our arrival at the prison camp somewhere in Germany, we met our new master, Herr Gefreiter Hinterhuber, a Bavarian corporal.
Now listen to me, all of you. You're French prisoners of war. That means that you are defeated soldiers. You're under my charge, and I don't intend to let you give me any trouble. Discipline will be strict, and you must learn the rules. It is forbidden to leave the barrack buildings between 8 and 12 o'clock and between 2 and 6 o'clock. It's forbidden to go to bed except between 9 in the evening and 6 in the morning. It's forbidden to be sick without a certificate from the camp doctor. It's forbidden to smuggle letters out of the camp. It's forbidden to read newspapers other than those issued by the camp authorities. See, it'll be easy for you if you observe the rules. Remember, you're in a prisoner's camp and not in a hospital. If the regime doesn't appeal to you, it's too late to complain about it. You should have thought about it before you declared war on Germany. Dismiss.
Those first few weeks were terrifying. Hunger plagued us from dawn to dusk and would often prevent us from sleeping at night. We spent our days in the cramped barrack quarters. We were forbidden to lie down, and not more than 100 men could find seats. And we talked of food and freedom and France. When the armistice was signed between Germany and France, hope flared up amongst us. According to the terms of the armistice, we were to be set free, or so we thought. Some of us brought the matter up before the German guards.
We'll be going home soon, eh, Mueller?
And according to the terms of the armistice, we'll be released immediately, eh, Mueller?
I don't think we'll be released just yet.
Why not? We're prisoners of war, and the war is over for us.
Yes, but the terms of the armistice say that you will only be released after the peace. That's what they say, after the peace.
What peace, Mueller? Do they mean the end of the whole war?
Yeah, perhaps.
But you can't keep us here. It's a violation of international law.
Is it now? I wouldn't know about that. But it's not really our fault. It's the fault of the English.
What do you mean, the English?
As long as the English are so stubborn, as long as they are so stupid as to fight the war that can only end with their complete destruction, there will be none of the peace our Führer speaks of.
Go on. You don't expect us to believe that, do you, Merle? That's true. You can keep us here forever.
Huh? No, it might not be so long as you think.
It might be longer than you think.
You French. You really think England can hold out, what? Why, the Luftwaffe will reduce England to a rubbish heap. But there is a point about France. Perhaps if France behaves herself now that she has been subdued, if there is no sabotage or helping the enemies of Germany, the Führer might wink at the terms of the armistice. As a favor, he might liberate prisoners according to their race.
Yes, in a few moments, general hysteria spread through the camp. A huge crowd of us massed behind the barbed wire, cheering every stroke of lightning, wanting to believe, even though in our hearts we knew it to be false, that we were watching the reflection of bombs falling on the German village. But after the Germans installed their radio in the camp, we heard regular German news reports at 6:30 every evening. They were broadcast in French, and naturally gave the Nazi propaganda line. But the result of this mass broadcasting was altogether different from what the Germans expected.
Misguided by this man Churchill, who is responsible more than anyone else for the continuation of the war, still think they can resist the overpowering might of Germany. They will soon know differently. That concludes our news transmission for tonight.
Did you hear that? They're not in England yet.
All these attacks against Churchill and BBC reports give the game away.
Did you hear what they said about the arrest of saboteurs in France? That means they're not having everything their own way.
And then when they say the RF did only minor damage over Germany, that means there must be air raids all the time.
Oh, thank God the British are standing firm.
Now at least we know what's going on.
Yes, we soon learned to separate the real truth from the propaganda. The Germans themselves gave us the key to the code. These broadcasts also went to the people of occupied France, and by hearing of resistance to the enemy, we took new heart. In Germany today, there are over 1.5 million French prisoners of war. Of this number, at least 80% are scattered all over the country, working on fortifications, along railroad tracks, and in factories. According to international agreement, there are numerous classes of war prisoners that should be exempt from forced labor. There were the sick, the non-commissioned officers, the medical corps, and foreign volunteers. But the Nazis soon found ways to get as much labor from the camp as they possibly could.
Name?
Dumoulin.
Why don't you want to go on a work party, Dumoulin?
I'm an ambulance driver.
To the medical section?
I was attached to an infantry regiment.
You were a private, weren't you?
Yes.
And you weren't with a medical section, but an infantry regiment.
That's right.
Well, then, if you were only a private and not attached to the medical section, you've no right to be doing medical work.
But, Corporal, I was responsible to the medical section.
Didn't you hear what I said? You leave in the morning, get out. Who's next? Name?
Armand.
Well?
I'm sick, Corporal. The doctor vouched for me.
The doctor vouched for you. Barrack Commander, let me see the sick list.
Yes, sir.
Here we are. Armand. Rheumatism. Rheumatism? What kind of a complaint is that? What do you think this is? The old lady's home?
But everybody knows I have severe rheumatism. Sometimes I can hardly move.
Well, we'll see if we can't cure you. You're fit for work. Just malingering, that's all. You're no sicker than I am. Report tomorrow. Next.
Morrow. Sergeant Morrow.
Sergeant? Who says you're a sergeant? Show me your service certificate.
It was taken from me when we were rounded up.
You expect me to believe that?
It's true. You went through all our personal things. I asked to have my certificate returned to me.
Oh, that's a lot of nonsense. Let me see your sleeve.
Here, you see? Sergeant's stripes.
You lie. You found those stripes. You stitched them on yourself, huh? I can tell by the stitching. Fit for work. Report tomorrow.
With those non-commissioned officers whose papers were in order, the authorities had a different technique.
You are non-commissioned officers. At present, you can't be compelled to work, for the Germans respect international conventions. But one of these days, France will be signing an agreement to cancel all privileges for non-coms. When that happens, you'll be sent to work in the Ruhr mines. Won't be nice there. Dirt, floods, constant bombing. You'd do better to volunteer to work in this country.
Out of some 150 non-commissioned officers in that group, they got 80. But soon, stories of conditions under which prisoners in forced labor parties worked got back to camp.
They're constructing an army camp in eastern Germany. They work 14 hours a day. The temperature often goes down to 30 below. They jam 800 Frenchmen into a few tiny huts.
You know what I heard from the doctor? There's a labor camp in the north, right next door to a soldier's camp. All day and night, artillery maneuvers are going on. Real shells fly over the prisoners' huts. Sometimes, they land in the camp itself.
To counteract the effect of these stories on the non-coms, the Germans decided to make things so miserable for them that they prefer work parties to staying in camp. And so they reduced food rations to a bare minimum. They compelled men to dig holes one day so that they could have the job of filling them up the next. They devised all sorts of fatigue tasks. But the non-coms held out. Rather than help strengthen the German war machine, they would go on digging useless holes forever, even if their backs broke. One night, from every observation tower in the camp, the searchlights glared in a blinding circle on one point on the main road. Here, 250 prisoners stood huddled together. Surrounding them were the dogs and armed soldiers, for this was the big night, the night of departure. Now, Nazi overlords must be certain that no gatecrashers increased the numbers of prisoners they had regretfully given up, because there was nothing more they could get out of them. These were the men who had been worn down by hunger and work parties, whom barrack life had sapped of vitality. They were the tubercular, the mortally ill, the physical wrecks. No, the Nazis would lose nothing by releasing them.
First 50 men, forward, march! Right. Prepare for identification and search.
name?
Pierre Dablin.
Dablin Pierre. Yeah, here we are. Age 30, brown hair, brown eyes, lost left hand in planing machine in Messerschmitt factory. All right, search him. Next.
Victor Dablin.
Dablin Victor. Tubercular, both lungs, age 28, black hair, blue eyes.
Files, index cards, photographs, then the search. We are forbidden to carry letters, papers, printed matter of any kind. Under close guard, we are marched to the train, and then, miraculously, we are off. The camp, as we pass it, looks like a gigantic gray spider in a web of barbed wire. On we go through the bleak stations of Germany. And then, in France, crowds gather along the railway line and throw flowers at us. Sometimes stormtroopers chase them away with sticks. Arriving at our destination, we are greeted by a French general. A band made up of French soldiers blares out the Marseillaise.